Do you think he has standard issue mind reading like the rest of them do, and that's just like a parlor trick? Or is that the only way he can read a mind?
At least the way they showed it, they made it look like that's a mechanical process by which he downloads the brains, you know?
You think he carries like a USB drive and puts the data
on
it?
Yeah, that's the thing. He's like, hey, it's a thumb drive. Get it?
Wow, Mark. Wow. Well played.
Greetings, Savory Inferiors, and welcome to Vampire Insider, the unofficial podcast of the Anne Rice Immortal Universe. Each week, co-hosts Christina LaRusso, Joanne Palumbo, and myself, Mark Snedeker, recap and analyze episodes, delve into the Anne Rice Library, and have in-depth discussions of other works about the supernatural. Today, after our hiatus, we are back to discuss our take on season 2's trailer. So we'll probably spend about 30-40 minutes talking about that 3 minutes, and we may add in some other miscellaneous items if our producer allows us. Let me welcome Joanne Palumbo and Christina LaRusso. Hello, ladies.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, guys. I feel like it's been forever.
It has been forever. 1.5 forevers.
It really has been. We are back in the saddle, though. It was an even more extended break than we thought because I got sick. So I had no voice.
Now, to be fair and to be upfront, I am not in an actual saddle, but I am wearing chaps.
Oh! So.
Ladies.
Are they assless chaps, Mark?
There is no other kind.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, so we are, it's actually not the trailer, although we can certainly go back and talk about the trailer too. Oh. They called it an amuse-bouche. Oh.
Okay. It's a trailer that they have now pretended is food. So whatever. That's fine.
But it is 3 minutes and 22 seconds. It came out of the New York Comic Con.
I like to call it a video snacky whack.
Indeed it was. Indeed it was. And this was quite a long segment of conversation between the vampire Armand and Louis in Paris while mayhem is going on in the back.
Santiago and Claudia are fucking shit up along with a few other vampires, destroying a house full of rich people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they say eat the rich, delicious.
Let me tell you, that there's no more romantic setting than, you know, two people hitting on each other while other, you know, vampires are inside that house, just absolute carnage, throwing them out the windows, ripping people's heads off, and they're just talking all calm and sweet and being flirty, and I was there for every second of it. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it really does test your focus. You're like, what are you, like a Scorpio? And it's like, and a guy comes flying through the window. By the way, my favorite is at some point somebody casually gets decapitated and the head just kind of rolls away like a soccer ball.
In the background by the fountain. I love that part.
Yeah, and his body just kind of keeps walking.
And he's like, oh, I guess I'm dead now. And he falls down.
It's so good. And Louis and Armand are in the foreground and chatting it up. And it's so good. It's so good. So, okay, let's talk about that in this episode. And then also what I'd like to, as the conversation goes, I'd like to start thinking about and talking about season two and some of the theories that fans have and some of the things that I think probably resonate with me and other things that I kind of go, cool theory. Right? Like, but of course, I could be completely wrong.
I mean, you had the body thief theory, so.
I did. I'll never forget that theory.
And we won't let you.
Well, we loved it. Can you set the time frame for us for the amuse-bouche?
The amuse-bouche. Okay, so this seems to be taking place. Well, it does. This is taking place in France.
Oui.
And one would assume in Paris or just outside of Paris.
And a beautiful chateau.
It is beautiful.
Lovely chateau.
And Armand and the vampire gang from the theater of vampires are on motorcycles. And they have their guests, Louis and Claudia, with them. And they are are going to, as you mentioned, fuck shit up at a big, beautiful chateau, as Joanne referred to it.
Correctly said, yes.
And living there, we find out, are people who during the occupation had been sort of Nazi sympathizers and now were taking...
And war profiteers.
And now are profiteering from the black market in post-war France.
So basically, they're people that fucked around and found out.
And now here they are. They did. They engaged in fuckery. And now here we go. They're going to meet some vampires. Secondary, or maybe even primary to that, is that Armand and Louis, as you all mentioned, are hitting it off at this point. And you get to see a lot of Armand talking. In fact, I think this is the most that Asad Zaman has spoken. Much, much more in just this scene than he did probably through the entirety of season one.
Can you imagine? He gets his daily script pages. He says, okay, my line today is, yes, I will turn up the air conditioning. And then that's it for the episode.
Yeah, this was way more dialogue than we've ever heard him say in one setting. So it was kind of nice.
He's taller, I think, than I thought he was. Well, does he look tall there?
He is tall. I think that he is a tall person. So you get to see them.
A person of height.
Kind of a person of height. You get to see him. Armand and Louis are now hitting it off and they're in their early stages. Obviously, they're not dating yet.
Right.
Now, remember, at the end of season one, we were introduced to Armand with the word, this is the love of my life.
Right.
The vampire Armand. Okay. Yeah. So now you get to see how they met and the meet cute.
What hell of a meet cute.
Decapitations are happening. And so
blood is spraying everywhere.
All right. So what I thought might be interesting is as I was watching and I was kind of jotting down some things that struck me, and I thought maybe we could go around the table, as it were.
Oh, I have 12 pages of notes.
No, you do not.
No. I have some apple juice.
And maybe throw out some things that caught our eye. So yeah. I want to start and I want to talk about the allusion to the movable feast.
Yes. Well, you've done some research on this.
Well, I mean,
in the sense of Googling it.
Well, it really wasn't. So when I hear a movable feast, I think of Hemingway.
Of course you do. So does Joanne.
I think of dinner. I don't know.
Okay, there you go.
I'm not nearly as sophisticated as you guys.
Yeah, is that like getting food to go?
Yes.
I like that.
But a movable feast also has a religious connotation, and that is the holy days in the Christian calendar that do not fall on the same day each year. Easter is an example.
Easter is a good example, right? It's, you know, whatever, the first Sunday after the equinox.
Oh.
When the crickets come out, whatever it is. There's some magical formula that's used for Easter. And I know as a Catholic, I should know that. But to be fair, I am extremely lapsed. So lapsed, you guys.
So, you know, Louis being Louis, you know, it could be that this is a religious illusion for him.
Sure.
But I just like the Hemingway thing because Hemingway's quote about a movable feast is this. If you are lucky enough to have lived in Paris as a young man, then wherever you go for the rest of your life, it stays with you, for Paris is a movable feast. And so it's kind of the holiest of holies for Hemingway. I mean, anybody who knows anything about Hemingway and really the Lost Generation, full stop.
Paris was the shit.
Paris was the thing. In between the two wars, mm-hmm. This is where a lot of writers and artists and all of the rest are hanging out in Paris. And you hear the voiceover of Armand saying Paris was an awakening for Louis.
Yeah.
So for me, a movable feast fits really nicely into that this is his moment, Louis's moment in Paris. And it's this time of coming into his own. He is now away from Lestat. He still has Claudia, but they are on this journey together. And Louis, you know, he's got a camera with him and he's taking pictures of the house and stuff. So he's a sightseer. You know, he's a tourist.
That was pretty funny. I'm like, okay, taking picture. Oh, look, dear. We have pictures of the murders. Would you like to see those slides again? Those are awesome.
Look, there's the guy whose head you ripped off.
Yeah, it's like, hey, wait, hold on. There's some really good arterial blood spray in this next slide.
Can you imagine? It's going to be like the slide show. Remember now, when you were a kid? Joe, do you remember that? Did you have slideshows?
Like the little thing where you would click and it would go?
It would click. Well, not a film strip, like a slide where it's on a big drum.
A machine. Yeah.
Well, so A Movable Feast was Hemingway's biography for a certain period of time when he was in Paris as a expat journalist, early 60s, I think. When it came out, when the book came out.
I was going to say.
I mean, obviously it was, you know.
64, I think, is when it comes out, like mid-60s.
But I think it's important to note that for Hemingway, that was very formative, right? That's how he kind of got in contact with all these other, I mean, really stellar expat literary figures in Paris at that time. So it was a big awakening for Hemingway, as well as what we are projecting for Louis. Lou, as I like to call him. Louis.
Louis is what you like to talk.
L-Dog.
L-Dog. Cool. Okay,
If it was an allusion to Easter, let me tell you, none of those guys are coming back.
No, definitely not.
That air of finality there, I think.
Well, okay, but hang on. Then, you know, you bring up Easter. It's this, but the idea of Lestat being gone. Lestat is in, you know, potentially in Louis's mind dead, although
he stayed in the tomb a little bit more than 3 days.
Yeah. but I mean, there is going to be a resurrection. There is going to be a point where Louis comes to this realization that Lestat is not dead.
Right.
And that
in the show, it's already canon that he knows, right? Because he didn't nail down the coffin, right? Mm-hmm. And wasn't there some sort of wink and nod or something like that at the end?
Daniel at the end of the last season is saying to him, "You didn't kill him.
Yeah,
this is you knew he wasn't dead." But then the question becomes: Is Louis waking up to that idea then when Daniel is saying it, or it not? And maybe. Louis doesn't know that Lestat isn't dead still. Yeah. And I have more to say on that in a minute. But at any rate, Daniel is kind of like tugging his coat. It's kind of like, did you eat the baby or was it raining? He's like, you didn't kill him. Yeah. You knew that you didn't kill him. You had to have known that.
Louis, you a lie. You a lie.
Louis has some issues around the truth, for sure. Yeah.
It's almost like he's unreliable in telling stories.
All right, Joe, what's some of your, did you have anything that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, obviously, because I'm a savage, and just like we talked about, the whole carnage going on in the background was definitely something that made me.
You are savage.
Yeah, I am. Made me rewatch it a few times because I had to watch what was going on in the background as well as the forefront and kind of not listen to them so I could listen to the screams in the background. And I was just loving every second of it. But for me, one of the best parts, I think, of this amuse-bouche is the very last few lines where Armand says to Louis, you know, about Claudia being able to block things out and he needs to do better. And he brings up Lestat. The sheer look on Louis's face for me was in that whole 3 minutes and 30, 40 seconds, whatever it was, that right there said everything I needed to know about how good this season is going to be. Because he just was like, oh, fuck. Tried to play it off.
Like, Lestat? Lestat who? What? Like, is there like a Delian Corps running around here somewhere?
Lestat. Never heard of her. You know? Like.
Yeah. There you go. Yes, that would have been clever. See, you would make a better Louis because you're a little sneakier and you can hide your emotions and thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's going to bring, obviously, you know, some really good content to the story. You know, he already knows, which we knew already, that he already knows what Louis knows. And I'm excited to see how that all plays out in the show.
I was surprised, a little bit surprised, Armand didn't just say, bitch, please. You don't even front.
Maybe he does. It cut off at that last second.
Yeah, maybe that's his next line. He's like, okay, I don't have to say anything about the air conditioner. Oh, good. Bitch, please.
I mean, and this is where you have to get into kind of who Armand is as a vampire.
Yeah.
And what you learn about Armand is that he has this very powerful mind gift and that he is able to not only very easily read other vampires in people's minds, but he is able to influence their thoughts.
Yeah.
In certain ways. And
which that in itself has caused quite a ruckus on Twitter and the chats, because I think people were so upset when others thought, is he influencing him to be with him and controlling him to do this whole book and all that? So,
you don't know. You don't know yet. There are some signs that suggest maybe yes, but then also, I don't know. And it just really depends on where we are in the timeline. Right.
Here's what I think people need to resign themselves to. Armand uses his gift to make people do things. There are consent issues there and all that stuff, whatever you want to think. You can still love Armand, but you have to recognize he does that, mm-hmm. right? And he doesn't ask permission.
Right. You can't be jammed up about it.
No, for sure not. For sure not. But
you know, they're monsters.
And they are. But I think that he does that whole conversation where he says, you know, she's very good at hiding her thoughts or blocking her thoughts. You are not, Louis.
Yeah, you suck.
Which
at
means
it, bro.
That Armand has been having his way in Louis's mind. Yeah. You know, he's been in there and
he's spending a day
like
in the Louvre. He's like, let's go check out the Impressionists.
He has VIP backstage access.
He does.
He really does.
He has all access.
So, you know, when they're flirting and Louis says, you know, I've been thinking a lot about you.
He's like, I know.
And Armand's like, mm-hmm.
No shit.
But he doesn't. He doesn't say that. But you know that Armand knows. Armand knows everything that he's been thinking. And so by this point, he's got it sussed out. I would imagine that
he at least knows that they know who Lestat is.
They have this.
He's essentially said that.
Right. What about you? What stood out to you?
So we've been introduced to a new vampire superpower in our boy Santiago.
Uh-huh.
So apparently Santiago, in addition to all the vicious vampire shit you can do, can use his thumb like a coaxial cable and jam it in the back of your neck and read your thoughts directly from your spinal cortex, I guess. I don't know. But he plugs his thumb into the back of the gendarme's neck, and he's like, oh, 14 people, this many women, this many, okay, 85 rooms, there's some small arms up in the upstairs library, blah, 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 blah. And then takes his thumb out. Now, unfortunately, this kills his source of information. So this is not a reusable trick on the same person over and over again. But that was an interesting kind of little feature that they gave Santiago.
Do you think he has standard issue mind reading like the rest of them do, and that's just like a parlor trick? Or is that the only way he can read a mind?
At least the way they showed it, they made it look like that's a mechanical process by which he downloads the brains, you know?
You think he carries like a USB drive and puts the data
on
it?
Yeah, that's what I think. He's like, hey, it's a thumb drive. Get it?
Oh my god,
that was so easy. All right. So, yeah, so that was interesting. And clearly he is a vicious, vicious killer.
Not a nice guy.
No, because when Armand wants these guys taken care of, he's like, Santiago, please. And then he does after, after almost a repeat of the a version of the Lestat head puppet. But this one was still attached to the individual. So very interesting.
Santiago, by the way, is played by Ben Daniels, is the name of the actor. He was born in 1964.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's my boy right there.
So.
What month?
June 1964. June 10th.
So he's older than me.
Not many are, Mark.
By months.
But this is something that I want to point out that I really appreciate about Interview is that not only are they having representation of people who are different, you know, all kinds of different races, but also ages. You know, you have Eric Bogosian playing old Manuel. And now you have Ben Daniels.
Now you know what
Santiago.
We haven't seen. Hmm. We haven't seen any husky vampires.
No.
No.
The aesthetic is definitely, you know, lean. Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll change. Maybe there'll be a chubby vampire. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, and maybe there's something very, you know, calorie burning about becoming a vampire. I don't know. But they're all seen. I mean, first
your
of all,
blood is keto. So that's probably why.
Yeah. There you go. They're in constant ketosis.
Santiago, this Santiago in the movie, it was Stephen Ray who played Santiago. And in this, it's Ben Daniels. And I love this Ben Daniels. I love this Santiago.
Yeah.
That he's wearing his hair bleach blonde, like super white blonde.
Yeah, platinum.
And he gives me very kind of cabaret vibes. So that would actually be interwar Berlin, right?
Yeah.
That kind of aesthetic. But that's what he gives me. Like when I look at him, I'm like, oh, this is very like, I don't know, cabaret to me.
Yeah.
So even though it takes place in the 40s.
Como ça va?
Yep, exactly. So I'm really excited to see what else Ben Daniels brings to that role. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about new Claudia, because we see her a little bit more in this, not tremendous amount in the beginning. Before she goes into the house, they all go into the house, and she's standing there, and she kind of looks at Louis
like,
and says,
coming, Louis?
Are you going to come?
Yeah.
And he says, no, I ate before the play.
Yeah, so obviously they've been to Théâtre des Vampires.
Yes, well, that's who they're chilling with here, right? The coven.
But, I mean, and they've seen them perform.
Yep, they've seen them perform. And so there have been talks about how Claudia looks angry about Armand and Louis.
Yeah.
Looks angry that Louis.
Well, of course she is. She just got rid of the last guy that was taking up his attention.
Yeah.
And now, you know, who knows what this guy's going to be like.
Yeah. I just partially solved the three body problem, and now I have another one.
Did you guys look at that scene with her and think that she was telegraphing, I'm angry?
No.
I didn't. I would rewatch it to see that, because I trust that you saw it, because what I remember is she's just excited to go get her grub on.
That's what I was going to say. She looked like a dog with a bone. Like she was just, you know, ready to go.
So for me, I did not see anger.
There have been
talks about it. I've heard people who say, you know, it's very clear that Claudia is put out by this. And I don't think she is.
This is right up her alley. What would she be put out about?
Yeah, I felt like Claudia kind of was like looking at the two of them and raised an eyebrow like, okay, you know, go ahead. I didn't get an impression that she at this point is super suspicious of Armand.
Right. Well,
I think that will come.
Yeah, I mean, Louis's giving her kind of the, you know, I'm going to go talk to
uh-huh. I'm going to go you talk to him. Yeah.
Just, you know, scooty scoot, because I got to talk to this boy.
I tried not to pay too much attention to Claudia in this, aside from when she was tearing that guy apart on the balcony, because I'm still out. The jury's still out for me for Delaney Hales, because obviously we haven't seen her really in the role yet. And I don't want to have to walk back anything, because I find myself doing that a lot. I'm like, I don't like Claudia, and
I hate Claudia. Claudia's so great, you guys.
yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna reserve my opinion on Delaney for now. But so I really didn't pay too much.
Oh, don't hold back.
I didn't pay too much attention in that moment, but as I think it back, like I said, it was more like she was being super aggressive. Like she was ready to go in there. Like that's her Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, a house full of victims. Come on. She wasn't angry.
I'm going to pop my fangs and get some blood.
She's like more for me if you guys don't come, you know.
But I guess what I'm wondering is, does she look jealous or angry? And I did not pick that up.
I don't see it.
It's going to come.
It comes, because at a certain point she's on to Armand. You know, she realizes that Armand wants Louis to himself.
Yeah.
And then,
and she's thinking, and you know, she's maybe like, this guy is going to murder me.
Like, where, you know, how is this going to go? And do I still need Louis? We saw in the trailer, in the actual the first trailer that we saw, we saw that she meets Madeline. Madeline is a red-haired woman. She's absolutely stunning. And there's a line in this exchange between Louis and Armand that gives me anyway, like serious cold chills. And I felt like it was foreshadowing. And I guess I should make the warning now that if you don't want to hear kind of what happens in the books,
they've only been out for like 30 years.
And that could potentially happen in the series as a result, then maybe this is a point to turn off. And come back next week when we're going to be talking about other things. He mentions Claudia and Claudia is attacking. You see her up on the balcony attacking this big guy, and she pulls him back and he says, "Oh, you know, you're Claudia." And he says, "Oh, she's, you know, spark in the dark," is what Louis says about her. And then Armand says, "It's a pity that she was made so young. Can you imagine what she would be like if her body matched her brain?"
Yeah. And Louis was defensive about that.
And I was like, yeah, Louis says, "Well, she does all right." And I was like, we're going to have the Frankenstein moment, because what you learn from Armand is that before Claudia was killed, he did some freaky surgery on her to try and give her. And again, Armand operates from this place of wanting to do what people want. And he thinks he's helping, but he ends up doing like creepy, weird things. Like cutting off Claudia's head and trying to attach it to a vampire, an adult female vampire body.
Yeah. I don't know why that didn't work.
Joanne, I'm dying that you just laughed about that.
Awesome. Like, that is hilarious. That decapitation thing cracked me up.
I don't know. It tickles me, the thought of that, but go on.
Yeah, no, it's good. That's healthy. It's normal.
But for real, that is something that he does. And I think, the more that I'm kind of looking online and people are speculating, I think that there's a good chance that he does it, that he takes Claudia's head and tries to attach it to Madeline's body.
She's like,
well, no, I mean, okay.
So, Joe, you think it would be funny if they would do that?
Well, I mean, funny in the sense that if they chose Madeline in general, I do think that would be kind of silly of him, like he's not a new vampire, right? So he's got to know that a head transplant isn't going to work. I mean, kudos for trying, but
I don't think he does. No, I don't think he knows that much about anything.
Yeah, Armand is this kind of, he gets hyper fixated on things. He tries his best, as I said before, to do things that he thinks people will want, that will keep.
But they're also strangely aligned with what Armand
wants. They are also, so that people will be happy that he does these things, and in being happy will stay with him.
Yeah.
And Armand, this vibe that he's putting out notwithstanding, because Armand seems very in control. He doesn't seem detached from the world the way that it's being portrayed in this scene. He seems like cool as a cucumber. I mean, oh my God. It makes me feel very blushy because the way he acts is just like, he's so in charge of everything. And I'm like, oh my goodness, Armand.
I think one phrase that could possibly describe Armand is unjustifiably arrogant, right? He thinks, because he's an old vampire and he's got a lot of power, that he's also good at fixing people and arranging their lives and things like that. And he's really a bit of a bull in the china shop there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to help this guy out. I'm going to erase 5 decades of his memory. And, you know, and they're like,
I'm going to kill his daughter.
Yeah. Armand, have you ever heard of the law of unintended consequences? I don't feel like you think these through very much.
Right.
So he's very impetuous, I think, and he wants what he wants.
In the book, when they describe it, he talks about how he did it, and the body is like a marionette almost, like the way, as I'm remembering it. I know that when I read it, that's what I pictured, is this body just kind of like flailing around and like the head and the body not communicating properly. But Armand does a lot of this bioengineering kind of stuff. In fact, in a different book, I can't remember if it's Body Thief or what it's after Memnock, but it's after Memnock. I think it's in Vampire Armand. He talks about how Lestat loses an eye, and he's like, let me go out and find an eye.
I got you.
I can reattach
all those optic nerves, no problem whatsoever.
I will get you an eye, and as soon as it touches that eye socket, the vampire blood will come in, and you'll be able to see through it, and then you'll have both of your eyes, right? Yeah. So, like,
then he takes the eye from someone with cataracts.
he doesn't think things through to their natural conclusion. He thinks, okay, if I'm going to do this, then I will get what I and really there is, as unselfish as he's being, as much as he thinks he's helping, there is some selfishness in it, because doing those things then will either endear Armand to you or put you in debt to Armand, bind you to Armand. And Armand just doesn't want to be. Remember, we talked about it when we talked about the book. He doesn't like to be. He doesn't like to be alone. And moreover, he feels a need to have someone who is tethering him to the current time.
Right, because he's really bad at that.
You don't get that from him the way Assad is playing him in.
I think they're going for a little bit more put together Armand, you know?
No, because in present day, he calls an email, you know, he sounds a little old fashioned with the email, right?
So he does. But he worked those fancy computerized blinds just fine.
That's true.
Well, he gets there, right? Yeah. Like, he gets there. He becomes fascinated with planes and with blenders and televisions. Yeah. And he gets to the point where he understands how to use them. It's just like this trial and error process of grinding things up in blenders. You know what I mean?
He's like, okay, I know you have a hangnail. Hear me out. I want you to put your hand in this blender. I will get rid of your hangnail.
Yeah.
All right.
It's always
shooting blood everywhere. Yes, but how's that hangnail?
Step too far. Always with Armand. Can we talk about the styling?
Girl, we can talk about anything you want.
All right. I'd like to talk a little bit about the costumes and the styling in the scene that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Impeccable.
Yeah.
Very on point.
Ugh. Armand is wearing these clothes. I mean, he might as well be a clothes hanger. He is so well, like, the suit is a little bit big on him. Yeah. It looks a little bit big, and he looks, even though he's a tall man, he looks
small. I felt like that was a style thing, though. He's like wearing a talking heads suit, sort of. You know what I mean?
This is not my beautiful house.
This is not, it really isn't. It's literally not my beautiful house. We just showed up.
But, you know, he's just in these earth tones. It's all just very gorgeous.
Badass sunnies.
His makeup is beautiful. Like, he's got, they've done his eyes in this just gorgeous coal lined eyes. Yeah. And just,
the amber eyes or whatever.
You were not wrong way back when you said he's probably the best looking one.
And that's really saying something.
And that's saying something, because look at the
show
company.
Full of good looking dudes.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, but he's not better looking than Sam Lee.
See, there you go.
Well, to each their own, Joanne. I don't know. The whole thing with Armand in the second half of the book is always just kind of like, to me, this is like not that interesting. Because Louis in the second half of the book becomes really not interesting. Yeah. He's sort of like, you know, I became really obsessed with art.
Yeah.
And I went to every museum, and I was just looking at art, you know, and Armand was by my side. And we looked at art, and he just kind of, Louis withdraws, and it's interesting because Armand compliments Louis in the amuse-bouche, and he says to him, I like the way you withhold.
You withhold. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like,
cautious and not withhold. I don't know about that. It's interesting that the things that troubled Lestat about Louis's withholding of love, and the things that Lestat needed to hear from Louis, the things that troubled Lestat are the things that Armand is now going,
right,
hey, I really like
that's how what you're looking for next.
Do you think though that that's by design? Do you think that because
yeah, he's going through Louis's mind like
I mean my relationship history has been a continual search for someone who goes, I love that you leave clothes on the floor. That's so awesome.
I do think, Joanne, that it is he's creeping through his mind. He knows everything that yeah. Louis's been through. So he's, of course, I mean, if you had that power.
Yeah, he's got the teacher's edition. I mean, it's not fair for him to be taking this test. Mm-mm. Not cool.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. I suppose what you were going to say, you know, about if I had that power, wouldn't I use it on somebody? Of course. I mean, who wouldn't? To become everything that they needed. Sure.
I knew you were going to say that.
If I was a vampire, I wouldn't do that as a human. But
do you think that Claudia has the mind gift?
She's got something.
I think she's got the defensive part of it. I don't think she has the reading part of it.
Because
just because we've seen no evidence of it.
Well, I can't remember if I saw this posted on Twitter or if I heard it in one of the many like 8 hour spaces.
Man, those guys are hardcore.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's wild.
There are spaces.
Slash Piper.
There are spaces. Inky Blot, and there are spaces that pop up. And Miles is on them sometimes, yeah. Black Girl Talk Fangs.
Yeah.
But like there are these spaces, they're pop-up spaces, and they last 7, 8, 9 hours.
There is nothing I can do for 9 hours at this point in my life.
It's so great. But anyway, so I can't remember if I saw it on Twitter or if it was on the space, but there's speculation that Claudia has the mind gift and that, in fact, when she says to him, and Louis, back in season 1, I'm going to tell you something, you want to kill Lestat too, that she's kind of planting ideas in Louis's head.
I think just Louis is easily manipulated. That's what I think. That's what she's doing. She's manipulating him on a less magical level. Mm-hmm. I think she's just doing it because.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mark. I think the run of the mill manipulator can manipulate Louis. I don't think you necessarily need Armand's gift to do that. I think he's a pretty easy mark.
Yeah, like I could see him falling for the Bugs Bunny trick.
What's that?
Bugs Bunny trick.
Yeah, when you go like, it's rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season. Rabbit season, duck season, shoot him back, boom, and he gets shot in the face. I could totally see him falling
Daffy's
for that.
Daffy's beak is exactly. back here. So exactly. violent. Oh, my God. No best. No oh, one.
So violent, as we're talking about a three-minute trailer with 35 deaths in it.
No, what I'm saying is it's no wonder I tolerate this as well as I do.
Grew up right. Fictional characters killing each other on Saturday morning, so.
Exactly right.
100%. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what may be coming in season 2. I don't know if either of you saw this, but Jacob Anderson was interviewed by, I think his name is Stephen Pape, and it's for like a little podcast, but like on YouTube.
Yeah.
And he said some really interesting things in the interview, and asked when, you know, what can people expect? And he said, well, it's, you know, totally different. There's the book and they follow the same track more or less of the book, but it's a lot darker, the series, than the book. There is a lot that can be fleshed out in that second half of the book, and I think it needs to be fleshed out. I think you couldn't have, you know, just a montage of the sort of ending of their relationship of Armand and Louis, where they're just going through museum after museum after museum.
Nobody wants to see that montage.
But here's the thing. I don't know if we are to the point in their relationship where it's coming to an end yet.
Yeah, that feels like a season 3 thing or late season 2.
Maybe. And, you know, because, we're seeing the beginning of the relationship in all of the promos that we're seeing or trailers. But I think that I wonder if the end of the relationship comes about because of the interview that's going on in Dubai. Right. And another thing that that Jacob is on the record as saying, not in this particular interview, but somewhere else, he says, keep your eye on Dubai.
Oh.
I think we're going to get a lot.
Is that a McDonald's commercial?
is that where Lestat's going to poke up his sexy little head?
Well, okay. And then the question is where do we see Lestat in season two? So let's ask that question. Sort of what do you think? When do you think we're going to see Lestat in season two?
Flashbacks for sure. I think it's going to be right away. I think they know what they're doing. They're not idiots over there. At AMC, and I think they know what they've got with Sam Reed, and I don't think there's going to be much of any episode. I don't think there's going to be any episodes where he's not in it, in whether it's a flashback or he shows up in Paris or Dubai or my house or wherever, he's going to appear.
Yeah, I was gonna say, remind me later that I asked for this, but Joni, what do you think they do have in Sam Reed?
Sexy motherfucker. What do you mean? What do they have? I mean, do you have eyes, Mark? No, they know. They know that him and Jacob Anderson, there's the draw. They are the draw of the show.
Although, I mean, they're not doing too bad with Armand, you know.
No, they're not. They're not. But those two, we don't know Armand that well yet. Like, we just know him as a lurker in the background, kind of whatever. And maybe now, you know, he's going to be that third kind of adding to that cast of, you know, of a big character. But right now, it's Jacob, it's Sam. And if I was going to bet, I would bet he is in every single episode of season two, all eight of them.
We definitely get Wolfkiller, right?
I think we're going to get, I don't know if we'll see.
Did we see him in a cloak or something?
Yeah, we do see him in a cloak. I think we're going to get historical Lestat. I don't know if we're going to get human Lestat, but I think we're going to get Lestat at the vampire, at the Theater of Vampires. So maybe maybe we will get human Lestat, and we'll see how he becomes a vampire.
Because it would be weird kind of to introduce Nikki after Lestat's already a vampire.
And Nikki, we know that we get Nikki. Joseph Potter is the actor who plays Nikki.
Right.
He looks freakishly like my ex-husband.
Wowzers, I didn't know that.
So we get Nikki. We've got to have Lestat. If we have Nikki, we have to have Lestat. Right. I think it's going to be flashbacks of the beginning of the Theater of Vampires. I hope that we have the scene where Lestat freaks out and starts jumping around and doing a bunch of flips, because that just tickles me and it just cracks me up to think about that scene.
Do you think he's going to be in every episode? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
No,
I don't think he'll be in every episode.
Half, maybe.
Really?
I don't think he'll be in every episode. What I am very, very excited to see, and this is not taking away from Jacob Anderson at all. I am extremely excited to see Sam and Asad acting together.
Yeah.
Because seeing Jacob and Asad acting together is magical.
What about when we get all three of them in the same room? Your head's going to explode.
Oh, I know. Oh, my God.
Talk about a three-body problem, eh? Hey-o.
I'll just as an aside here. Someone complimented Mark that made the mistake of complimenting.
Oh, that's a huge, huge mistake, you guys.
That he said something about the three body problem. So now that is all you're ever going to hear.
You're going to get that every episode.
Every episode, there's going to be some kind of remark about the three body problem.
That's right.
Let me tell you, when I first met Mark and Christina, if I would say something nice about Mark, she's like, "Don't ever compliment him."
She warns you against complimenting me.
Yeah. Remember, Mark, when we were in New Orleans in the Uber, and the Uber guy, like, I don't know, you guessed what country he was from. And he's like, "Wow, you're really smart." And I'm like, "No, don't do that. Do not tell him he's smart. This is the worst thing you could do, Uber guy."
He'll believe you.
So I think that I don't think we'll see him in every episode. I do think that we will see him. And my big I can't wait for it moment is to see him and Armand, Lestat and Armand going at it, because these two actors.
Literally.
And we've never, ever, ever seen that play out you never see that in the first film.
Nope.
Right. You don't see that in the film. So to get to the point in this telling of these stories where you might see, where you see Nikki, where you see Armand and Lestat interacting.
You're so excited.
I cannot wait for that to happen, because that, that is going to be like the next step for me. Because so far, everything that we've seen pretty much, there was some form of it in the books.
I have a feeling it's going to be one of those nights where we watch it at like, you know, 4 a.m. on AMC Plus, and at like 5 a.m. we're on the phone going, oh my God, oh my God, did you see, did that happen?
That is exactly what is going to happen. Mark, what are you looking forward to in season two?
Showing how much more chill I have than you two.
Oh God.
Just in general. I am very much looking, I always like the Dubai scenes a little bit more. Not that the other thing isn't amazing, because that's really what the whole thing is about, right? But I really treasure the Dubai scenes because they're so, because I don't know what's happening.
Well, that's the fun part, right? We don't know what's
I know they're going to try to kill Lestat, right? I know they're going to create Claudia. I know all those things already. But the Dubai stuff is really very fresh and new, even though they're talking about stuff that's already happened. And, you know, we love Eric Bogosian.
There's just something magical about those scenes, though. There really is.
And we are pretty sure Episode 1, Season 2 starts with, so where were we? Right?
Hopefully.
And I'm really looking forward to those parts especially.
Yeah, well, like Louis said, keep your eye on Dubai. I think that, you know, we're going to learn about where they are in the state of their relationship currently. I think there's a scene in the trailer where Daniel turns to Louis, and Louis is looking confused, and Daniel kind of gives him a look like,
bro,
this is like, dude, like, this is it. He's onto something, Daniel. And he's helping Louis recover some kind of memory or clarity around a situation.
Yeah.
And I am curious if that is going to have to do with Lestat not dying in the theater, because in the book, he thinks that Lestat, when Louis destroys the theater, he thinks that Lestat
died in the fire,
dies in that as well. And I think that Daniel kind of helps him come to that realization that Lestat may be alive.
Okay, buddy, you're not really good at killing this guy. He just doesn't want to die.
Yeah, for a vampire, he's a pretty incompetent murderer. Like, finish the job. That's your thing as a murderer. Yeah. Everybody, I mean, Joanne knows that.
Oh, that's murdering 101, Mark. Check for a fucking pulse.
Okay, well, should we wrap up here?
Unless you have anything else that you're looking forward to.
Well, I mean, there's so much, but
many discussions with me, certainly.
I'm just looking forward to new content.
100%.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see our listeners, like, be really engaged again.
Yeah.
Because we are extremely grateful that through this extremely long did I say extremely twice? Okay, good. Very long hiatus, that people are still interacting and listening to the podcast.
Yep, yep.
Even if we haven't put a new one out in a month, there's still people listening to the podcast, going back to old episodes. So I'm really excited to see how much just energy there's going to be.
It's going to be awesome. It's going
to
be awesome.
People are going to lose their goddamn... We're going to have to try to do some kind of, you know, live stream, quick turnaround. Christina, all right, now you have to stay up all night editing this episode. Go. Yeah, just take the day off the next day, just so we can get it done.
Exactly. All right. Well, Joe, do you want to take us out?
All right, guys. Thank you for joining us tonight as we go over the amuse-bouche for season... Can't even believe they call it that, but okay. For season 2 of Interview with the Vampire, hopefully we will have a release date soon. In the meantime, feel free to follow us on Twitter @vampire_insider. You can follow Mark @MarkEatsPeach. And Christina is @ChristinaGenX. And remember, share us with your friends. Thank you, guys, and have a good night.
Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.